This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee's NPR.
Rick Steves' name is synonymous with European travel. From his popular PBS television show to his guidebooks and a radio show, Steves has encouraged Americans to go out to see the world and become forever changed by what and who they encounter. As one of the United States' leading authorities on travel, Steves and his company will lead about 30,000 people on European tours every year. And he wants to help preserve the places that he and his clients and fans travel to each year. Steve's climate commitment is pretty straightforward. He plans to donate $1 million each year to nonprofits that are involved in what he calls climate smart projects. And while that's a heck of a commitment, Steve tells Lake Effect Susan Bentz he considers himself neither an environmentalist nor particularly environmentally savvy.
As a businessman, I want the ethics of running my company with a self-imposed carbon tax so we're not profiting off of hurting the environment. Which is, I think, what our government should impose on all companies, is a carbon tax.
Well, there we have our interview. That says it all, really, doesn't it? That's powerful and call for direct action.
Yeah, and it's fun to be doing this in a way that other companies can be inspired by. And we've worked really careful to... it's a complicated issue. People's eyes glaze over when you start talking about, you know, mitigating how your carbon, the carbon you create is exacerbating climate problems. And we've distilled it into a very tight and concise program here on our website in hopes that other travel companies can be inspired by this and just steal it from us. Take this whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel, swap out the proper nouns and make it fit your company. And then you too can let your travelers travel in a way where their flights are carbon neutral.
When did you decide to move into this project?
Well, we've been, you know, I've been taking people to Europe on my tours for 30 years. And over that time, you know, Rick Steves' tours have grown to now we took 1,200 groups around Europe last year, 30,000 Americans. And for, I'd say 10 or 12 years, I've been feeling like, come on, I got to stop talking about this and I got to do something. And we've fiddled with different solutions to the problem. And I want to stress, I'm not doing anything heroic. I just want to pay my fair share. If I'm profiting off of making people fly to Europe to join my tours, I should cover the cost of their flight to Europe and back to our environment. And experts tell me it's about $30. Now, until this last few months when I've been coming, getting across the goal line with this project, we did different things. You know, one time somebody told me if you plant six trees, that'll take care of the carbon that one person produces when they fly to Europe and back. Well, that's kind of cool. So I spent a lot of money when you're buying trees for everybody who took our tours. But I just thought that was more of a feel-good thing. And I wanted to get into something that really fit our style and everything. So we've come up with a program now that really fits our mission. And there's a lot of ways that you can, contribute to fighting climate change. But we wanted to do it in a way that helps the developing world. And we wanted to do it in a way that helps our government better understand the importance of this issue and the ethical responsibility the United States government has in making businesses like mine honestly pay for their contribution to the climate change problem. So we've decided, and experts have told me it takes $30 smartly invested in climate-smart agriculture in the developing world to mitigate the carbon cost of one American flying to Europe and back. So if we take that $30 invested smartly, that person flies carbon neutral. Multiply that by the 30,000 people that took our tours every year, round it up, and it's $1 million. So we've created a portfolio where we give $1 million to six or seven organizations in that portfolio who are either, you know, investing in climate smart agriculture programs in the developing world or advocating in Washington, D.C. That means lobbying so that our government is more smart and honest and ethical when it comes to dealing with climate change as it confronts our entire planet.
So you've announced your 2019 organizations. Those are three. Is that correct?
We've just got three, and we're fielding requests from other organizations, and it's kind of an exciting process. There are a lot of great organizations doing a lot of great stuff for climate change, and they're all deserving of this kind of support. But, you know, one of the joys of doing this on our terms is we just get to decide what are the parameters for somebody to be in our portfolio of groups that we're supporting. And they need to either be advocacy groups working in Washington, D.C. to help our government do things like work with the Family of Nations to the Paris Climate Accord or have carbon taxes on corporations that are still hurting the climate situation. That's the advocacy side. Or the climate smart agriculture side would be not help people who are suffering from the impact of climate change. That's a fine thing to do. but I want to help developing world farmers earn their living and feed their families in a way that is less destructive for their environment. A big part of the poverty situation in our world is small family farms in the developing world. And a big part of the climate change is the gas emissions that they generate. I think like a quarter of human-generated greenhouse gas emissions are generated by poor farmers in the developing world. And I can't fault them for this. They're just trying to feed their kids. But we can help educate them and equip them so they can live their lives and contribute less to this problem. And at the same time, they will have more dignity and a better world. So it's pretty exciting. And when you think that we can help small family farms in the developing world produce more food more sustainably with less negative impact on the environment, for me, it's just an exciting thing to be a part of.
So one of the organizations that was selected is Project Concern International, and it does, as you mentioned, promote climate-smart agriculture in developing countries, and it empowers women. I wondered, of course, that struck me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been working a lot on this lately because we just were in Guatemala and Ethiopia producing a one-hour TV special called Hunger and Hope, Lessons Learned in Guatemala and Ethiopia. And I was with people working for the Project Concern International, PCI, and I've seen the work that they do in the field. And I've learned from them, as well as other NGOs that I worked with in this project, that it is just common sense these days, if you're a smart, modern development agency, to empower women. Women are the people that we need to educate to live their lives in a sustainable way. The women are the ones that educate their children. Women produce the food. Women are the primary consumer of water and fuel. They make the decisions. They're the responsible ones. And, development aid organizations don't just want to spin their wheels. They want to get traction and make a difference. And there's a lot of very fundamental ways that they get more traction. One is local ownership. Two is sensitivity to the local culture. And three is empowering women. So we want to work with organizations that are empowering women, and we want to, we recognize there's certain low-hanging fruit. I mean, most of the world cooks its food and makes its water drinkable by making fires, and they heat their homes with fires, and that's with firewood, and they have to walk hours, and they have to cut down trees, and then they deforest their land, and then the rain comes more violently now than it used to, and it just washes away the topsoil, and it becomes a vicious cycle. And if these struggling farmers can have a more efficient stove, right now the poorest people, there's about a billion people that are so poor they do not have a stove. They cook with wood on a ground, on a dirt floor, in the middle of their hut. And if we can just teach them and educate them and help equip them with a modern stove, they will use less than half of the wood that they use now, and that will cut their deforestation problem by 50%. This is real. This is real people. This is making a better life for families and for moms, for little kids, and it's also helping developing farmers, have less of a negative impact on their environment as we all work together to help stave off climate change.
Is part of your message that our individual actions, day-to-day, whether traveling or not, something that you get involved in commenting on?
I'm not trying to be a climate hero. I'm just trying to be an ethical businessman. And of course, as good citizens and as ethical people, we should be doing what we can to protect our environment. I'm frustrated because I live in a society where it's all driven by corporate interests, and corporations are legal entities that are required to profit maximize for their shareholders in the short term. And if that's your standards, without any government intervention, you have no reason. In fact, you have no ability to do what I'm doing. But I'm a privately held corporation, and I can do this because I own the company. If I was publicly held, I imagine my board would sit me down and say, no, Rick, we're not going to give up $1 million of our profit. We don't have to. So I'm giving myself this. It's a self-imposed carbon tax. But what I would like to do is inspire or shame other tour companies to do the same thing. If they won't do it, I would like to remind travelers that they can have a lot of clout in how they travel by choosing companies that are doing something serious, something ethical and honest about their contribution to climate change. And then maybe corporations that are driven only by profit will see it's good for their bottom line to be ethical in this regard. And most importantly, I would like to raise awareness that this is one thing we have a government for. A government is to set parameters. We live in a capitalist world, and we need a government to set the guidelines so that it's not just dog-eat-dog and take from the future to pay for our stockholders now. If we had ethical accounting practices created and enforced by our government, everybody would pay for the carbon costs of how they make their money. And in the case of a tour promoter like me, I would pay $30 per person more that I take to Europe because my flights need to be carbon neutral. It's not making us heroes in climate change. It's just covering the cost to the environment of our flights to Europe. I think it's pretty simple, and I think it's pretty exciting, and it's certainly no hardship on me, and it would be no hardship on other companies if they were just honest in paying their carbon costs when they take people to Europe.
Are you seeing the impacts of climate change firsthand in your travels?
Maybe that's one reason I'm so enthusiastic about this program is because when you leave the United States, you realize there's no discussion about climate change anymore. Only in the United States are people wondering, is there climate change and what should we do? I go to Europe and I see it everywhere I go. I was just in the Netherlands. They've got this storm surge barrier they've built to protect Rotterdam from high water. It's as big as two Eiffel Towers put on their side on wheels, and it rolls shut when the water is high. I've been in Norway going to with tour companies that used to take people on glacier walks, and there's no more glaciers in that valley. I've been in Sweden, which is inundated with Italians in the summer, trying to escape the unlivable heat that Italy is suffering through in the summer. I was just in South England, and there's floodgates now at the bottom of High Street on little medieval villages because the cobbled lanes are getting water at high tide now, and they never did before. That's just in the rich world. When you travel, you realize that climate change hits the poor world hardest, and it hits the poorest people in the poor world hardest. And that, to me, is what really motivates me. I know because of my travels what it's like to walk with a farmer in the dry zone in Guatemala. Historically, the food ran out before the next harvest in May. That's when what's called the hunger season began. Now the hunger season begins in March in that part of Guatemala. This is a devastating change for the lives of the people who live there, and it's out of their control. It's caused by climate change. I've been walking in Ethiopia, and I can see, listening to the farmers explain their reality. What is the consequence of violent and unpredictable weather that comes with climate change? Right now, it's unprecedented. It's caused by climate change, and it's impacting the poor world. Now, I know in the United States, politically, if we look at who votes for what and what motivates voters, we don't really have much compassion for poor people south of the border. We can say we're Christians, but love thy neighbor kind of runs out in a hurry. What we're concerned about is our stability, our economy, and our own national security. So if that's what motivates you, climate change matters because climate change contributes to conflict in the developing world. It further exacerbates the environmental problems, which makes more hunger, which then forces more migration. We're going to have more wars, and we're going to have more desperate immigrants knocking at our border if we don't do something about hunger and climate change. It's not an insurmountable problem. It's a very realistic problem to grapple with. We did it in the 60s. We came together as a nation to go to the moon in less than a decade. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of that right now in our country. I think we could be inspired by that. Get together, get beyond the politics, recognize the reality of this, and as a nation, become leaders again in fighting climate change. But today, in our country, there are people who deny the existence of climate change. And I think from the rest of the world's point of view, either they are stupid or they're greedy. It's one or the other. Climate change is here. You got to learn about it. And if you're a decent person, you'll do something about it, even if it hits your bottom line.
So, Rick, in your reckoning with this, and clearly you are very well educated on the topic, what about this travel thing just in general and the impacts that we're having in traveling to Europe and other places?
Yeah, I think it's a simple response to this is just to travel less. That's mostly by people who don't want to do anything about this. I think if you want to travel less, that's one way to help out. But if you want to travel more, you can contribute to organizations that mitigate your impact on climate change. Mitigation is mitigation. When I fly to Europe and back, I add to the problem. When I support a group doing good stuff, it takes away from the problem. If that is a net wash, then I have mitigated my contribution to climate change, and I think that's just fine. I don't think we need to be monks. I don't think we need to stay put now and have staycations. That's wimping out. This is not that big of a deal. It's just a matter of honest accounting. And that's what I want to do as a businessman, is not be a hero, but just impose upon myself accounting standards that should be put on us by our government. That's what a government is for, is to do the right thing in spite of small, greedy, individual organizations that just want to, you know, profit maximize at the expense of this carbon problem.
So you were featured in the New York Times Magazine earlier this year, and the title was Rick Steves Wants to Save the World One Vacation at a Time. Do you think that's a good description?
That was a fun article. I learned more about myself in that article than I realized I would. And I think Sam, who wrote that article, was kind of talking about my mission lately, which is to inspire Americans to venture beyond Orlando. You know, if everybody had to travel before they voted, our country would be much stronger and our world would be a much better place. The world is an exciting place to explore. The world has never been safer to explore. And I can say that because I've spent 4 months a year ever since I was a kid overseas. And people who disagree with me probably don't have a passport and don't do a lot of traveling. And their worldview is shaped by hysterical commercial TV news. But the world, from my personal firsthand experience, is filled with love. It's filled with beautiful people. It's filled with families. We are all children of God, and travel lets us get to know our neighbors.
You can learn more about Rick Steves' climate commitment from a link at WUWM.com. Steves spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter, Susan Bentz.
You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com.